Can you speak up? I can't hear you, Danny.
I said, if we approve and voted on the consent calendar, then that should be on here.
Okay, I missed it.
So, I have 2 points to you. Then the amendment is...
That is, the first motion is passed.
The first motion. Consensus that the draft minutes of April 12th be approved.
Motion, a letter of special district attorney, public works requesting the lighting on question of St. Paul's Day on Road.
Oh, that was the only thing on the consent. That was the only thing on the consent calendar. Okay, sorry.
Do you understand the speech as corrected? Treasurer's report. Sentiment of normal unit at all. I did go down to the bank and close out the account. And one of them put a heavy cash in there. I'm not sure if
that's true. I'm submitting that from the field. And so that's the limitation to do with the board agenda, which has been able to come back.
Okay. So we are still receiving heavy cash under the $100. Otherwise, it's a problem being paid for bills. Introduction of speakers. See, I thought Katie Brooks was going to be here, but she isn't. Patrick, we have Patrick Jones from Contra Costa Community Development. The first is Terrence Chung, Chief of Staff for Supervisor Joya. And I think we have Lonnie Dive and Ruth Snacker, who are going to speak on the Black Lighting and Manhole Man. We have Freddie Hager, who is going to speak for the campaign. And we have Ethan up here on the line from the Australian Chair of the Australian Planning and Zoning. And we have Sean Sharp. And we have Pat, Chair of the Regal Park. And Don Garfalo, who is the Australian Charter Macron.
I'll also be representing the office of Grand Sheriff tonight.
Okay, very good. So we're back to public comment, and we're going to limit 3 minutes for a speaker. However, Don is going to report on two subject areas, so we're going to go ahead and take them. This is just out of the air idea. You guys can think about it or not. September 17th is the Australian Stroll, and there is a parade. And I thought, you guys need to get out and get people to know who you are. You could put up a big sign, you could march in the parade. Oh, we already approved the staff that we were going to participate. In fact, we have a subcommittee. So that is going to go ahead. Okay, John?
Yes. Madam Chair, MAC members, today was officially released the Contra Costa Civil Grand Jury's report titled Fire Danger for West County Residents. Has common sense gone up in flames? I'm going to read the summary, it's only going to take a minute. Residents of portions of the area of West County served by the Contra Costa Fire Protection District are in danger of death, injury, and property damage because the nearest available fire unit will not respond to emergency calls. This situation has come about because the City of Richmond unilaterally withdrew from the automatic aid agreement between the Richmond Fire Department and the Contra Costa County Fire Protection District in 2002. This agreement has been in place for many years and provided the means for the nearest available fire units to respond to emergencies regardless of jurisdiction. This agreement was originally put in place in 1981 with the then West County Fire Protection District and continued when that district was absorbed into the Contra Costa County Fire Protection District. Since the agreement was terminated, there have been a number of proposals to remedy the situation, but no agreement has come forth. It's only a matter of time until a disaster occurs while the nearest available resource sits idle. It is imperative that the two jurisdictions cease their petty bickering and immediately reinstitute the automatic aid agreement. The complete report, there's some around here, and the complete report is on www.cc.gov /courts.org/grand jury, and it's on all of these reports. You've got a number of them around here, so you don't have to write all that down. So, in essence, we've been working on this report for almost a year, and now we have the thing that's hit the news lately is that fire up there on View. That fire up there on View. Yeah, right. And in fact, it's on today. It's in today's paper. That both parties to that mutual aid agreement are saying, in essence, that we probably could have saved those because we would have had enough personnel to allow us to attack the fire inside the structure. And you only have two members that responded at the beginning, and all they can do is fight from the outside. So if 69 over here in Appian could have gotten there, within the usual, like, 3.5 minutes it takes them to get to that area, those kids probably would have lived. Now, this report's been quite a while in the making, but I'm delivering it officially because it was just released today. I'm also including a letter that I wrote on behalf of the MAC in 2002. Yeah, and thank you. And yes, in my car. The other thing is I attended the Fire Protection Fire Commission meeting Monday. And I'm delivering my report as regards to the Fire Commission meeting. El Sobrante in May had 55 Code 3 calls. Previous month, 52. And of those, 46 were rescue. That's help and rescue. The total number of calls that were processed were 67 for the month of May. The processing time was 1 minute and 33 seconds. The turnout time was 1 minute and 40 seconds. And the response time on scene for El Sobrante Station 69 was 3 minutes and 37 seconds. For the total reaction from the first bell to being on site was 7 minutes. Last month it was 6 minutes and 29 seconds. This is the average of all the calls. Confire is not entirely happy with 7 minutes, but sometimes considering the distance involved with their response from Station 69, that's probably sort of okay. But by point of comparison, our next fairly close fire station is Station 70. Well, we got one over here, 68, too, by Hilltop. But San Pablo, Station 70, by point of comparison, has 225 calls that they responded to in the same time period. And of those, 194 were rescued. And structure fires were 6. And their average response time was 6 minutes and 46 seconds. So.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yes, ma'am.
Don, yes. Is Chief Richter actually know about that fire? Was he able to communicate or hear a communication that may have came from the original?
Never received that call.
So he didn't even know that fire was there.
The call didn't go to...
So he can't even eavesdrop on it. He wouldn't even have known it by any means.
They're different dispatch.
Yeah, that's part of the mutual assistance that's got to take place is that you've got to have a communication system that's compatible with everybody. And it used to be, it isn't now, but according to Channel 2, this evening by, 5:10 or so, they reported on this, and they said that Chief Banks claims that within a very short period of time, we're going to put the mutual assistance agreement back in play.
I understand that it's going to be before the council, the Richmond Council.
June 20th.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Next time, right.
So it's important that all of us try to attend that mm-hmm. and push for that.
Because it affects us directly. there's any fire in the valley, it would either be Station 69, and if we have mutual assistance, it would be Station 70. They can get to me in about a minute and a half, whereas Station 69 can get to me in about 3 minutes to 5 minutes. So there's a difference. But the other difference, and I have to be in all fairness, the other difference is that CONFIRE had virtually 100% paramedics responding to emergencies, whereas Richmond had EMT. CONFIRE has telemetry to the hospital in which the person is going to be delivered, and Richmond does not. They have an EMT, and that's pretty much it. It's basic Red Cross life saving.
Thank you, John. I think we have to cut this off and go on.
Very important question.
I want to introduce Katie Pope from East Bay Municipal Utility District, and we're going to go ahead and take your report. I noticed that was a problem for you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
I'm going to return to leave it
every time on my. I have three things. First, a reminder that the EIR comments for the San Pablo dam repair are due by June 26th. Mm-hmm. So that's our deadline. So any of you who want to make comments on it, you can either do it online. Or I think you have already made your comments.
We have a letter that's on the agenda tonight.
Okay. I didn't see that on the agenda.
It's in supplemental.
It's a supplemental one. It was a supplemental.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a supplemental.
The other one is just to let you know of something that we just approved yesterday at our meeting. And this is an execution of an agreement to install photovoltaic cells on top of the Sobrante water treatment plant. It's going to be a huge project. We're really looking forward to this because we are trying to become more energy self-sufficient. We do have some help with PG&E for this. They're giving us a $1.2 million rebate. For this. The total cost of it is $3.2 million, but in 25 years we will have completely recovered all the cost of it, because the cost savings that we have, the time of avoiding that necessary extra energy in this area, which frees up more energy for everybody else. So it's a project that we're really excited about, and also it'll have a lot of effect on the community because it's all inside the treatment plant, but I wanted you to be aware of it. And on the Thursday, I did check with Michelle, who was on vacation this week. She said there were no nuts and bolts kind of things that she usually reports on as far as the speech goes. But we do publish yearly. This is an issue that's pretty much in-house for our employees. It's kind of highlighted some of our employees. But I just got it last week. The center article is on the history of San Pablo Dam. And I thought that this might be of interest to people. A lot of strong copy.
Thank you.
And I think I brought it up for anybody in the audience to say,
Yeah, what type of cells are these photovoltaic cells, and where are they located in El Sobrante?
Those are solar panels.
Yeah, I know what they are. I used to make them. What kind are they? There's many kinds. There's some that are really bad news, let me tell you. What kind are you using? Some are actually toxic if they get damaged in any way. Are they silicon based or?
Maybe she can get back.
Actually, you know what? My son-in-law has it.
Okay. Okay. And just where is the address then, if you don't have that information?
It's 430K kilowatts. It's being done by Powerline Corporation.
Okay, and where is the address of this El Sobrante power plant? Where is it? Where is it located? The photovoltaic cells, where are they to be located? And where is that located?
Yes,
Valley View. Okay.
Actually, there's an app in here.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
We're not going to actually be doing the work for a while, so.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something that Marilyn brought up earlier, see if Katie has an answer, which is whenever you bring this up, I'm curious. You're saying that to keep the water level low in the reservoir, they're draining into the delta. I thought all the water releases were downstream into San Pablo, into San Pablo Creek.
If it is in the San Pablo Reservoir, it goes down. And that was another point I did mean to make sure that you were aware. We are now back again below the danger level. So we have been able to get the water back down. Once it comes into San Pablo Reservoir, it does have to go down to the creek. However, if it's coming from Part E Reservoir, if we're releasing up there, It goes down the Mahoney River into the bay, and that would go out.
But it's not released from San Pablo Reservoir.
That's not what I asked you. What I asked you, originally in Orinda, you had a luncheon 2 years ago, and I asked, first I asked you and then another gentleman, how are you lowering the reservoir? How are you removing the water from upstream, especially in high rain years? And they said they're holding it back. That was the answer. Well, I knew that didn't make any sense. You can't hold it. But I said, are you releasing it down into the delta? How are you getting rid of the water? And then last time, I think it was either you or Michelle Blackwell actually said, yes, they're putting it into the delta to keep not so much from flowing into San Pablo Dam Reservoir. I don't know where the reservoir is before that. But
The reservoir that we get our drinking water from is Part E Reservoir, which is just below Jackson, just below Highway 49, above Lona.
That gives you all the water.
And that is on the McCollany River. Comanche Reservoir is below that. So our drinking water actually comes from Part E, but we own both of those. What we can't use, the water that comes into our system comes through our aqueducts. And those are 8 to 10 feet wide pipelines that we have coming down 9 miles from part of the reservoir. Mm-hmm. The water we put in those comes through our treatment plant. And essentially, what we don't use winds up in San Pablo Reservoir. The problem when you have a heavy rain year like this that we can't control is the water that you get from the watershed that is also going into San Pablo. So that was our problem this year with all the extra rain and keeping it down. But generally, we don't put it in the aqueduct, and therefore we don't bring it here locally unless we have room for it.
So your contention is the only way you're lowering the dam level, the San Pablo Dam, at San Pablo Reservoir level, is simply to just make big lots of releases down San Pablo Creek.
Well, and controlling what we bring in.
There you go. There's bingo. That's what I'm talking about.
We can't control, and we control that by not bringing it in the first place. Okay. We cannot control how
now you get where I'm talking about.
What nature does to us when we have been runoff.
Well, I just want to clarify. The question Marilyn's asking is that given that you don't want as much water into the reservoir as before, is any of the water that would have been coming in being diverted before it gets here so that the keeping the dam level low is resulting in some upstream diversion of water that goes into the delta? Right. That's the question.
Okay, and the simple answer to that is we are given full releases down the McCollany River. I don't know if you've noticed in the paper, they're not allowing any boating on it because the water that's going down that river is going down so fast, it's too dangerous for boating. So, yes, the answer is we're leaving it in the river, it is coming down, helping to flush out the delta, which is a good thing for nature. But we're just not putting it in our pipes, and it's not coming down.
We're going to have to move on.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dora.
I just have some questions. She was also brought up in the last meeting on the rare, November 18th. Do you have any knowledge if that's the correct date?
I don't have that.
Okay.
What is
just
rare?
Just,
This is the rear property, with the basement.
Could somebody tell us what rare project is, so we know?
Rare is the
recycled water.
Richmond advanced recycling expansion. It takes. I'm slower than the engineers who are working on it.
Recycling of sewers?
Yes. And it's on our one actually. Right now, we produce water for the cooling tower.
Mm-hmm.
We take the wastewater, we clean it, super clean it, so that they can use it in their waste for the cooling tower. That's saving us 1 million gallons of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our portable water that we can save for everybody. The RARE project is going to actually go further and do some reverse osmosis on it so that they can use it for another particularly project. The cost has become so close that we can use recycled water now for this project and save the potable water that we're bringing down from the mountains for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so expensive. And that's something that we looked at it was very excited about. But I've got to email because you just need it in there, right? So I'll get it.
Thank you, Jamie. Patrick Roach has been very gracious in letting us defer the report and take also Sergeant Haggard's report so that he doesn't have to stay around the whole time.
Well, forget we still have public comment at some point. Okay.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and take that report.
Lieutenant Gordon, all the rest of your attorney said that's an investigation. Burglary brought the night for residential and vehicle burglary that is 22 in the month of May. That has been taken off the first part of June. We had the JP not here for a couple of weeks, and they have left some areas involved in it. So it took it off point. We also got involved with crime prevention, and we had gentlemen volunteer go down and give out these pamphlets. If I were a few pamphlets, over 100 of them were issued the last week of May, and we kind of expect another 100 or more going into June. And those are typically put on homes where a volunteer drives through the neighborhood and the garage door is left open. He sees doors, the garage is left open, stuff like that. He puts his pamphlet up on the door. I don't think anybody sees those, but they're out there doing that. So, we said you guys should have copies of this, but I'll give this one to you.
Thank you very much.
Quick question. I was going to ask Lieutenant Vaughn, there was a report of fireworks in my neighborhood, and the address was given to the deputy, but it wasn't followed up, and he was going to follow it up with juveniles. And I was wondering if that had been done yet.
Do you have an understanding of about it?
Okay. I forewarned him that I was going to ask him. I should have forewarned
you. I'm vaguely familiar with what you're talking about,
okay.
But as far as the particulars and why anybody you talked to, I can't answer that. Sorry. I wish you would have prepped me. I'd love to.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, and you're Detective what?
Sergeant Haggard.
This is something I just learned about at the crime summit we had the other last week, I think it was. We had three armed robberies in two nights on APM Way in March. Now, I never heard about this. They were where they were, had the guy down at gunpoint at Central Foods, and then they went down to the gas station. Now, I just learned about this. I went and talked to the guy at Central Foods, the owner, and he is has never been had a call back on it, never been a follow-up. He had one guy was held down and was so scared he wouldn't get off the floor for an hour. Everything he had was taken, all the money, and now they have to close at 8 instead of 9 because of the danger. And I think that he deserves a call back about what they've done, follow-up. There were 5 ski-masked men, very frightening, came up there, and the same group came down twice in a row and hit the gas station down on APM Way, and this is the kind of thing that I want to express my concern. I wish Sheriff Buffer actually were here to express my concern, but there was no follow-up after this terrible incident.
Black friends, those kind of gypsy-type people come out of Richmond or camp out little places like that.
Gypsies?
Well, they're bands.
They were a band, all right, I'll tell you.
And they hit different areas. They'll go over to Danville. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're gypsies, but they're, we call them that, so they go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And, it could be that the follow-up, somebody should probably call.
Have they ever caught these guys? Have you ever heard of them? Have you ever caught them?
No.
Wow.
They can go on for a long time doing that. Mm-hmm. And when they eventually do get caught, they start getting bolder and bolder. It sounds like they're hitting. We don't know. A lot of times the investigation runs out of my hands.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If you could pass it on, sure, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a quick question. In the past month, we had the occasion to call the Sheriff's Department about a suspicious person in our neighborhood, and it turned out that the dispatcher did not even have any kind of idea where our road is. There was no map that showed where the road that we live on is. And this sort of surprised me because the road's been on the beach since at least 1906, the Westover Monte Verde Road. But I guess my concern is that apparently isn't on the Sheriff's Department maps. And so they run into this dispatching of here and into the post property. So bring in
Skyline.
That extension is Spring Avenue. So I'm just expressing this concern here that it sounds like the Sheriff's Department needs to update its maps or something.
The house is in there since 1948. So it ain't new.
I'm just expressing my concern, and I think that there needs to be some updating on that.
Okay.
Bring it to the 21st century, maybe.
Yes, sir. I have a statistic in Houston, and she says we obtained 160 signatures within 6/10 of a mile, and 50 of those people have been victims of crime. This is between Main Road and Mahoney Road on Capitol Avenue. We have the petitions and the signatures right here. So if that's of any interest to you,
all those apartments down here?
Apartments, homes. My home has been victimized 3 times, and I live in a private home.
And we can go to all the apartments here.
We just couldn't be up and down all
those
Okay. But that is a large percentage in a small area. Thank you. We'll go back to public comment for a few minutes. Any other public comment?
I have just a real quick one. That's kind of a meeting in East Hill, 3 Bay Hill, miles up here. Wildfire and the reduction in the resource management plan and the EIR. The intent is to reduce wildfire danger and increase habitat in East Bay Park. And it's about a 2.5 to 3 year project plan to start in towards the end of 2007, 2008, beginning of 2008.
Yes, Marilyn?
Yeah, in the last meeting, the May meeting, the two trailers that Tom Mason has for team rooms on the Boys Club property was on the agenda, and I wanted to make a motion that we support that, and you would not allow me to make that motion. I think that is not correct, and I want to object to that, and so that's my statement about that.
Thank you. Mr. Hardy?
Yeah, this is probably off the wall, but I usually say things that are off the wall anyway, so let's dear Senator Feinstein and Assembly Purser Hancock are definitely opposed to the casino in San Pablo, which I find commendable, I guess, from their virtuous standpoint.
No.
However, they have a little problem with card flows. As long as they're getting money, you know, you don't feel a fetch it bill. And I think that was been described before. But what sort of bothers me on their virtuous actions is that they don't seem to have a problem with Mary Jane, or more commonly referred to as the marijuana Fulton or lower in this county, and in particular also Branch. I'm having a hard time reconciling those two positions, and also this position of this advisory committee, which has seemed to have fallen silent on it. And also it bothers me is that the fact that the city of Dublin, some small little town, south of here, I recall.
I read that.
And was there another city?
Yes,
in this neighborhood?
There was another city that I read
about. I can't recall. Where does Supervisor Joy have his office? What city is that?
El Cerrito.
Oh, my. How unfortunate, because they also came up with a prohibition on that. And what's really scary about this whole situation now is I noticed four vacancies up at the USA gas station, that little strip mall that was put in there, which shouldn't have been, but that's another story. And I'm thinking, God, four vacancies up there, they can put four more of those joints.
No, they can't, because there's a moratorium that has been placed so that no more...
I'm sure the creativity in this county will provide for it. Trust me, because that will happen. There's a lot of creativity. Let me move on. Now, the fire at Hilltop, I'm not going to say I said anything about it before at all. I'm not going to mention that. It's never been mentioned in this before. But I find, again, another disingenuous comment from the grand jury, a representative of the grand jury. Now, what should have been reported upon by this representative of the grand jury? That the physical mess this county is in. Which they did have a report, but the county supervisors don't listen to the grand jury, otherwise we wouldn't be paying for doctors' medical over there. But in any event, to come out with that, only because this came out. And the only reason this came out is because 2 days ago on KGO Radio, this guy that writes for some little newspaper there in San Francisco, I can't think of the name of it.
McKeown.
Does it start with Cron or something?
Yeah,
that little rag, you know. They came out with a report. So now, what do we have? We have the grand jury coming in for our little meeting here and telling us about it.
Okay, thank you.
Now, wait just a second. Now, I'm against having reciprocity fire districts now, because I think they're going to raise the taxes in the county again, and they're going to use that as justification when they got a $300,000 person who's supposed to put out these newsletters, right? Remember? The hire that we had with the communication expert in the county, and they sent him out here. I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure what time I'm living on anymore. But thank you for your time and your indulgence, and I'm sure I gave you all a good laugh, because I'm sure that the next fire will probably take out the hills back here.
No, it's a very serious situation.
It can't be serious, because then something would have been done. There's nothing serious that the politicians can avoid. Look what's happening on the national and international scene. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Eleanor? I just wanted to add one comment that Don Del Toro said that the grand jury has actually been working on this for a year, and just by chance, it comes out at this particular time. Thank you. Any other public comments? If not, we're going to go again with the agenda.
You should have filed a lot of tickets.
We're on the consent item. And there are two items. There was a supplemental one on the lighting. And not on the lighting, I take that back. There's another one on the response to three members of our match group that have been working on, that's Susan, Erica, and Wendy, and there was a supplemental agenda item added to that. So with the two items, is there a motion to pass on the
two items?
Is there a second? So, any discussion?
Okay, wait a minute.
I just want to say while she's looking that up, is that I think that the group did an excellent job in the draft EIR response to the East Bay draft EIR.
So, the CCC 1.2 is the EIR response?
Yeah.
And then the first one is adopted by, okay.
Did you have any comments on
the first one?
Yeah, I have comments on that, but you have to pass the thing first. I mean, you have to, or you
we're,
have
to pass the version.
Okay, I read the letter, and I don't seem to have it with me. My problems with it was that it was very heavily on, let's put it this way, it didn't really represent a lot of concerns of El Sobrany. There was a lot of things about bicycles and, wetlands and I mean things that are not really concerns of the average person in here in El Sobrany, especially with bicycles. How many people in El Sobrany would be impacted by this for riding a bicycle? I mean, and there was a lot of that in here, so that's my objection. Also, they did not come up, in this letter did not contain the objection I had about diverting water into the delta, which I think is definitely something that should be pointed out as an objection. In order to lower the level of the San Pablo Reservoir.
Any other comments? Yeah. Okay.
I live right next to San Pablo Reservoir. I mean, I'm right away of it. I mean, it needs to be fixed. And, I mean, I like bicycle riders. My husband likes bikes, but I think it's more important to fix the people that live there than worry about bicycle riders.
Okay. Any other comments? There's a motion on the floor to pass the consent calendar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, those opposed?
I'm opposed to 1.2.
Okay.
Okay, 1.1 is okay, but not 1.2. You should have taken them separately, really, because they're two separate items.
We can do that if you like.
Well, yeah, if you could have asked for us to see one poll, and you didn't do that.
Okay,
but
let's just say it passed with one
nay
against
CC
1.2.
Yeah. They're two separate arcs, so you can vote on separately.
Okay, so that was CC 1?
No, that was the consent calendar that we just passed. So we missed the step. Marilyn missed the step.
Yeah, you need to say, does anybody want to poll the aunt?
Yes.
And there's nothing in that.
Okay. We didn't get polled, so yes, the consent calendar.
Okay, we're back in presentation.
Wait a minute. I need to be.
Yes.
My recorder's not working. What just happened?
We approved the consent calendar, which had two items.
Okay, both.
No, we did not. We approved both, but there was one nay on number two.
Right.
Yes?
Okay, so seven, one, six, one.
Right. One was passed by everybody. The other one was passed with one nay. We're on presentation, and we have Patrick Roach from the Contra Costa Community Development Department. And thank you for being so patient with us and giving us the time to let those other people speak. We appreciate that.
Good evening. At your last meeting last month, you asked us to come back with an analysis of the land use data for the land use portion of the general plan that we're happening in the Lane Road. So we had your desk to something that we prepared the details of block by block, looking at a proposal for a revision to the general plan, lowering the potential unit count and square footage for commercial square footage on both San Pablo, San Road, and Appian Way. So let me explain to you what you have, and I think there's going to be a lot of material here that you want to look at and I'm sure you're going to have questions. If you want to ask questions, perhaps you can hold those until after I complete the presentation. And then if you have more detailed follow-up questions, I can certainly, I can answer questions if you want to call me or something.
Okay. So I was just going to reiterate that we're going to hold questions until after the completion period.
So let me walk you through what's in there. The first part is an overview and summary, and it contains the a map of the 15 blocks that we're looking at in analysis. Right. We can make that available to you if you like. We can make it available to you.
Would you like a copy of this? So we're not allowed to have a copy of what you're saying.
It's public information. Anybody can have it.
It's on the internet. I got it on my website.
We should have one in the library. So, getting back to what's contained in this, is a map that shows you the downtown El Segundo area with 15 blocks in color. And then there's a summary table for each block.
Okay, this is the summary table?
Yeah, this is the long summary table. Okay. And this gives you, for each block, the total, it shows the streets, the acres for that block, the potential dwelling units that may result from the proposed plan change, the actual yield of dwelling units per acre, the potential for commercial square footage, and then there's a column that talks about land use policy emphasis and development assumptions. And then there's another column, the final column talks about a general plan map boundary adjustment, yes or no. And what I want to describe to you is that in the course of looking at this, we found instances where the general plan commercial land use designation encroaches into a single-family residential neighborhood, and we think it would be necessary to make the corrections in the map to make sure that it's clear that that's a single-family neighborhood that's in commercial zone. So as you work your way down through the blocks, you'll see that when you get to the total, we've given the subtotal for the back end and subtotal for the double acre. That we're roughly looking at about 123 acres. It, when you total up the dwelling units, you come to 605. And then the commercial square footage is 333,655. Then the next page is a table that shows a comparison of land use scenarios. This is something that I've had discussions with individual members of the MAC about, trying to understand a comparison of where we stand today, where you would be under the current general plan, where things were under the March 2003 draft environmental impact report, and where things stand with this proposed provision to the general plan. And so, again, starting on the first set of columns, it's showing the existing number of dwelling units and the existing commercial square footage. This is data that we took from assessor information. So we think it's reasonably accurate, but again, there's going to be some margin of error in terms of square footage. For general plan build-out, this is taking the theoretical development capacity for the entire corridor, both Avenue Way and San Pablo Dam Road. That's if you were to just max it out, build it to the ultimate maximum density or maximum square footage that would be allowed under the general plan. That's a number that is sort of like, if you think about it, that's a 30-year number that's way out there in terms of when it would occur, but that's just a theoretical number at this point. And then the draft EIR in 2003, we were looking at a total of 1,100 dwelling units and about 572,000 square feet commercial space in the on the two corridors. And now what is in the detail that you'll see on the block level is where I came up with this proposed revised general plan amendment, which is the dwelling unit count on the commercial square footage. What I did is I pared things down significantly, and you'll see that in the details by block. We looked very closely at each parcel, trying to identify whether or not it really had any true development potential, looking at several things, and I'll just call your attention to block one. So go to block one.
You want to look at this?
Yeah. Okay. So the way this is set up is there's an aerial photo that shows you an outline in orange. I believe that's orange. Yeah, it's orange. The block. That's the area that we're looking at. The next page shows for block one. This is right out of our GIS, General Geographic Information System Mapping Program. The general plan land use designation for that block area.
What are the dots?
The dots are accessory parcel numbers. I'm going to get to those in a moment. And then the next page is existing zoning. That's the zoning district for that area. It's RB stands for Retail Business District. MH stands for Multiple Family High. And CO stands for Commercial. The next, then if you want to move on to the next one, you'll see it, what is a page from the assessor parcel book. This is a map that's prepared by the county assessor that identifies the basic area of that parcel and the parcel number. And so what's outlined in mine shows yellow. I took a highlighter. I don't know how well the photocopy, but it's just yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows you again the area that we looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next material that you'll see is block one includes a table or a spreadsheet. Block one, the first one that shows up is the original analysis that we used for the 2003 draft EIR. This is how we got to the numbers in 2003. The next one shows you how we pared it down, where we took a closer look at a parcel level, trying to figure out whether or not it had any true potential for any ability to go to a mixed-use designation. Now, what's important to understand is in the table, there's the APN, which stands for accessory parcel number. We have the parcel size and square footage and in acres. So it's expressed both as a square foot and also as acres. And then we have show you the existing general plan and zoning. That's the fourth column in. Existing use. Now, existing use refers to the use that is according to assessor information, the way they look at the parcel in terms of property tax. And then in some cases, we show the assessor use code. That was just more for our point of reference. The assessor has its own use code system for its purposes, and we sometimes look at that just to verify information.
Mm-hmm.
And then we show the revised general plan amendment, additional dwelling units, and additional commercial square footage. And then finally, the last column shows the development assumption. And that's where we identify whether or not we think there is any potential for development. So on block one, those first two parcels, where it says existing use is vacant and a creek, it's our judgment that it's not going to be developed. It's a creek. It's all part of a creek structure. There's no ability to go into develop that area without a lot of problems. So we're not identifying that as having any development potential. So then we take the total for the block. So what I want to emphasize is the total for the block, because at a parcel by parcel level, each parcel is going to be unique and different. And there could be some margin of error in terms of what the commercial square footage would be and what the number of dwelling units would be, but it's the block level that we derived the unit count essentially from. And then the other thing I want to sort of emphasize is that we also describe where we think there is a mixed-use development potential. We it says MXD, and there's a colon, 12 dwelling units to the acres, and a 22 FAR. And basically, that is the assumption that we use in terms of calculating the development potential.
Where are you looking at right now?
If you look at the parcel, the first one that shows table. MXD on block one.
This table. Oh, okay. All right, sorry.
All right. So on that parcel, it's a vacant parcel. So we think it comes into play. It's a potential for development. Its current general plan designation is commercial. It's zoned for retail business.
Okay.
It's a pretty small parcel, clearly. But if you were to apply, strictly speaking, on just that one parcel, the 12 dwelling units to the acre and the 0.2 FAR, you get potential for about 7 dwelling units. This would be multifamily units. And about 260 square feet. So the concept, remember, for mixed-use development is that it's integrating both commercial and residential on a site. It could be either above, you have the residential above, or behind the commercial retail. So for the purposes, for planning purposes, for the purpose of estimating the potential development capacity, this is how we derive the numbers. Does not mean that it would happen necessarily in that case. It gives you theoretical development capacity according to development assumptions. The other thing that is more particularly described at the back of the summary table is back on the summary table, convert this for each block. We talked about the mainline follow-up emphasis and development assumptions. So a concept that we think would be appropriate if you're going to look at mixed-use development for the two corridors is that you want to encourage lot consolidation. Because clearly, as you look at the development pattern, the lotting pattern, is that you have lots of small lots or very narrow lots. And so the ability to develop the site, most developers would prefer to have a more generous development footprint to work with. And so if you're looking at new development, you would want to encourage the ability to have consolidation of lots. You'll also notice that in some cases, and this is why the summary is important, we've gone back and we've said, you know, looking at it closer, some of the original concepts back from the downtown transportation land use plan, from the planning charrette, and from our own assumptions back in March 2003 may not be what everyone is really thinking could happen. And fundamentally, there's some issues in terms of just plain constraints, particularly on San Pablo Dam Road. And so let me describe those. If you go to block 13 and block 14 and block 15, it's our opinion that on the north side of San Pablo Dam Road, where the creek is running up against the property line, we really think that there is a fundamental constraint. And so we roll back the potential for development in that area in terms of dwelling units. We think that there's all kinds of issues in terms of developing those locations as they get closer to the creek. The other thing that we have done is that you'll notice on block 15, we still talk about encouraging lot consolidation, but on the north side, this is as you get closer to El Portal, we think it would not be appropriate to mix commercial and residential in that location because of the proximity to that key intersection with El Portal. You've got too much going on, essentially, in that area. Then you have the creek up against you. There's just too much to mix in there. And so that creates a problem. The other recommendation that we think may be appropriate is that on the south side, we actually have had discussions with a major property owner, the gentleman who owns the Terraces office complex, a gentleman by the name of Rory Gordon. He has in the past developed congregate care senior housing, so we think that might be an appropriate location for the potential for congregate care or senior housing, given that you have actually a nice mix there of two pharmacies, the Walgreens and the Rexall drugstore. And so it was limited to the back portion on the south side of St. Paul Game Road, where there is, if you look at the aerial photo on block 15, you'll see that there is room in the back there if you were to consolidate two lots together to create that.
The terrace is in block 15?
Pardon?
The terrace is in block 15?
Yes, the terrace is office complex. And then, again, this is our view. Block 14 on the south side, where you have Hillcrest moving down toward Pitway. We really think that's where it seems like you could have the ability to create more of a town center, a central focal point for development activity. And that's where you have, you'll see, you bump up the dwelling unit count to about 15 dwelling units to the acre, and that's where you start to get a little bit more critical mass in terms of residential development. Now, the other thing I think that is also important is that have been contacted by Mr. Hugh Kostich, who owns the property that is now used by SBC for the telephone company's service yard. And he is very interested in looking at redesignating his site from light industrial, it's currently zoned light industrial, and has a split zoning, split general plan of commercial and single family high. He's looking long term. He's thinking that a higher and better use for his property may be for some kind of residential property. So if the other part of that is I think a key piece in the puzzle in terms of dealing with circulation. We talked about creating, connecting Pitway eventually to Hillcrest to create a circulating block. That property really makes that potential happen.
What block is this?
It's block 14 on the south side from Hillcrest to Pitway.
I think this
is
the fire shop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bank and Rancho.
So that's something that the council may want to give some consideration. We received a letter actually requesting consideration of your general plan amendment study, and we discussed it in the supervisor's office. I'll tell you that what we do when we have requests for general plan amendment study is we usually bring it back to the board for authorization. I cannot start a general plan amendment study without authorization from the board. What we discussed with them is that you have this effort underway right now looking at the larger area of the downtown El Sorrento area, but you have one property owner and another one actually over on Mr. Porter, who are definitely interested in seeing some change to their land use designation for the purposes of a different kind of development. And it seems to be, in those two cases, seem to be somewhat in sync with some concepts that have been discussed in the past about creating a different development pattern in Bronte. So that's out there for your thoughts and consideration. So this is what you'd asked for. We've rolled back the Union Council C pretty significantly and brought down the commercial square footage. The 333,655 square feet, if you think about it, that's about the equivalent of three neighborhood shopping centers in the modern sense, where you've got like a supermarket, about 55,000 square feet, an anchor, that's the anchor, and then you have about another 20,000 square feet or so for a Walgreens, and then the other shops around it. So that's kind of what you're looking at is the equivalent of three neighborhood shopping centers if you're in a more traditional suburban location.
Is it time for questions?
No. We're waiting until you hear.
Anyway, the last piece that I wanted to call your attention is in the back. You'll have some background information. It's reference and background material. There's a map of the general plan for the downtown El Sorrento area with the overlay of the blocks.
Which one are you looking at?
It's the very last
the very last section.
Reference to background. It's got a little bit of bright red and red
light. You hold it up back and forth.
This is Maryland, the last red section.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I have to put the first page after the last page.
It says reference and background. It starts with the downtown page. It's got a general plan, and then it has two maps showing the zoning districts for Caffeine Way and St. Columbia Road. And then it also includes some excerpts from the county general plan, the land use element. It's more of a key when you see the symbology of a CO or MH or MM. That helps direct you to what the land use designation is and what's contained in that. And then finally, the very last sheet in that reference background, it's just a little thumbnail kind of view of how you calculate FAR for area ratio.
This is current general plan.
That's current general plan, right.
You don't have anything like this for proposed in your
comments? No, I haven't drawn up a map that shows any assurance, and that would be our next step. What I would want to hear, and you don't have to give me an answer tonight, but what I would need to know, and I've talked about this in the past, is in order for us to redo the traffic analysis, we need to have some information as to whether or not the range of capacity, development capacity, the 605 loan units, 335,650 square feet, that's important for us to undertake the traffic analysis. So at some point I need to have some sense that, you know, this is the range that we're talking about. This is kind of the envelope in terms of development as part of any mixed-use development proposal. And then the other thing that clearly I think is probably worthy of more discussion is going through each of the blocks and understanding my thought process as to why I think something isn't going to be developed. Like, for example, you raised the question at the last meeting, churches. I don't think for churches or private schools, I think those are fixed. I think those are going to stay there, and they probably would not be in the works in terms of mixed-use designation. There are other things like apartment buildings, where you have an existing apartment building. We're not proposing applying a mixed-use designation. We think those are pretty much fixed. They're going to stay there. I'll give you my opinion, and you'll see it in the analysis. It's my conclusion that the trailer park is very a difficult issue in terms of looking at a redesignation of the land use designation. We presented either with or without a mixed-use designation, but I really think that, you know, that's something that obviously is for more lengthy discussion, but we presented the analysis to show what it is and with and without it. And actually, the summary table shows it without it.
But I believe it's somehow that could be retail on the front.
It's got commercial and retail business at
right, and then
in the back of
the multiple.
And that's the other thing that it's frustrating from a planner standpoint, because you have some very odd situations with a couple of parcels out here that are, have got no consistency between what the general plan says and what the zoning district is. Mm-hmm. And at some point, regardless of what you feel about, you know, mixed use designations or mixed use development, we need to reconcile that. Because I got a question yesterday from a gentleman who's looking at one of the parcels in Block 7. It says commercial on the general plan, and it says multiple things high or M29. And so, you know, they're looking at, they want to do residential. And so they're, you know, for people who are making, you know, an investment decision or a business decision about developing, there needs to be some certainty. What can they do? That basically concludes my presentation.
I had
one question. On one of the summary sheets, you show the commercial cars going from, because of 30-year plan,
right,
from 3 million down to 300,000.
Right.
What exactly, or how is that done?
Well, what it is applying that UFAR, floor area ratio, in conjunction with potential for residential. And so, understanding that what we've clearly heard from the community in the past is, if you're going to do mixed use, you're not interested in a really high density residential or really intense commercial, and so it's much more of a lower level in terms of development capacity. In terms of density, you know, you're at the high end of the multiple low, which is 7 to 11.9 units per acre, in terms of multiple family well in the general plan, and at the low end of the multiple median. So you're right about midway between the very bottom of multiple low and the very high of multiple median. So it's right there, somewhere in the middle. And that's applying it on a parcel level basis. And then when you take a look, after you exclude for after you factored in the total acreage for the block, we'll see, we calculate, the yield is actually much lower in terms of flowing into the trade.
But it mainly was done by changing the MDR.
Right. Okay. Bringing it way down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two, one really quick one and one more involved. The quick one is just a clarification for me. It's probably obvious to everyone else, but commercial means retail and professional.
Yeah, it has a broad range of essential uses, but in this area, typically retail business district or neighborhood business district, it allows for your traditional retail stores plus things like a professional office building, dental office, or
farms. The other question has to do with something that's been brought up a couple of times. If we were to desire to put a moratorium while we're in the process of ironing out the details of the changes to the general plan, what would be involved?
Well, I'm not as well versed on the law in terms of establishing a moratorium. We can get back to you on what that would take. I don't want to say something that would be incorrect from a legal standpoint, so I have to get back to you on what the parameters of that would be.
Do you have any idea how long it would take to put into effect?
There's a definite length that you have to apply the moratorium to. You extend the moratorium. have a legal basis to do that.
Moratorium on what?
To extend the moratorium.
On what? Moratorium.
If you're going to have a moratorium on development.
Could you get
absolutely. We can get you a quick description of what the moratorium requirements are.
Where we're going to do the moratorium amendment.
There are strictures in the law that you can do it, and the our advice is you have to follow the law because you're going to be yourself tied up in the trouble if you don't follow strictly the law. So
yeah, if you can get that back to me, I'll get it out to the members.
I have two questions. First one is, what are the maximum amount of residents that will be incoming if your general plan recommendations are followed?
Well, it's 605 dwelling units. We have not put in there in terms of the mix, whether it's one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Typically, for kind of development out here in the Nelson Bronte, when I was looking at the accessory information, most of the multiple family is one, two, and three bedrooms, so that would be the upper range that you're talking about. I think that's probably appropriate for this area. To get beyond four, there are complications for the developer in terms of developing a unit that has more than three bedrooms. It's much more involved process.
So we're talking about at least 2 times 650, which is 1,300, possibly 3 times 650.
You can certainly apply. Let's say assume that it's all two bedroom units. At least one person each of those bedrooms, right?
And why are you encouraging? This is a question I have every time I see this. Why are you encouraging mixed use? Or is there some kind of a mandate you had to do this? Why in particular are you encouraging?
To the planning processes that have been underway in Nelson Bronte, which is at least 2000, where starting back from the task force that was established by the Chamber of Commerce, they had identified the potential for mixed use development. And so had the planning board. That was something that was identified as a development pattern that was of interest to the community.
And do you know why they identified this as a development pattern of interest in the community?
Well, I can only give you my supposition that part of it is an interest in seeing creating improved development opportunities, increasing housing opportunities, and an interest in seeing a different kind of commercial pattern.
Okay. Because I know most people that I talk to do not want 2,000 to 3,000 more people living here. So if you go with that, you're saying the community wants it, but it's not a community that I'm aware of. So it's just, that's my comment. It's really strange.
If I could make a comment on that. In order to, the transportation funds are being made available to cities and places that are having mixed use.
I know
transportation.
That.
There's a big push to look at mixed use around transportation hubs. And in order for us to participate in any of those funds, you're going to have to definitely take a good hard look at that.
I had a couple of questions. One, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding correctly that on this table, it has the main scenarios.
Right.
It has the existing dwellings and commercial,
right.
And then the other three are the additional. right? So you would add, to get the total, you would add the first piece to these ones, is that
actually
correct?
The general plan build out is a separate category. That just shows you the theoretical capacity if you were to build out according to what the general plan has. But when we deal with the draft EIR, that was the potential for additional dwelling units, right?
Right, so in addition to what's there. But you're saying this includes these. The first one includes these and the second two are
right.
Okay, I just want to make sure that means.
The other thing, though, there is a kind of an important distinction is that it's a little bit hard to tease out the net result because you're going to have a situation where there are going to be some loss of square footage for commercial because there's going to be potentially a block or several parcels more residential than what's analyzed. But in terms of the overall number, 605 is what we're referring to.
For a total.
Yes.
For
a total.
Yeah. So my impression of, in this discussion we were just having about utilizing mixed use and, trying to focus people next to transportation and services. My feeling from the community process over the numerous years was really people were interested in a vibrant business district in somewhere, that would create a walkable area where people could do their shopping, where local residents could really use the services that are here rather than a lot of people who go far.
Right.
And to really, revitalize and create this, more community feel, walkable area. And I'm curious, what you think in terms of, in the way that you selected where mixed use development could be, and I, not having looked at this very much, it appears that it's, one parcel, yes, and then a couple next to it, probably not, and then another, yes. And so it feels like it could potentially be very piecemeal. And I'm wondering how that fits into this sort of, walkable, vibrant business district.
Well, you are dealing with a fairly long stretch of area that it makes it difficult to concentrate. So this is something that is probably worth discussion about. Do you want to focus more at the node points or somewhere? Like, for example, the block, I can't remember the block number, but there's a block there that has the Boys and Girls fire station all together. You'll see that I started to say, look, those are fixed. Those aren't really going away. It's not, there's potential for mixed use is really not present on that site or those locations. But further up the block, just to the north of that, the next block over, you have block that are these linear shapes that seem to make sense to consolidate if you're going to develop from those. To not encourage that continued pattern of these long linear lots off the path. So certainly, up toward the triangle, you've got opportunities. By the way, on the triangle itself, you'll note that I did not identify any residential. I think that's another situation where you've got too much going on. You don't want to have residents trying to park their car and all that stuff. That's just not an appropriate location. But up at the node there's certainly an area of concentration. There's some blocks that are, right now, I think, ripe for looking at in terms of trying to encourage something better. As you make the bend down on Avenue from the post office, you'll have several sites there that can certainly use a lot of help at this time. But again, this is what we've identified here is it allows for it. It doesn't require it. So it's one of those things that, it has to be at a grassroots level. If the property owners want to use it,
I'm not quite finished. So in this discussion, so that I can understand, I know at some point in the past, you talked about having community meetings to really identify parcel by parcel, and I'm just wondering if a general plan amendment is passed before that process, does that then put the potential, let's say this were to pass, and then the community identifies, we really don't want mixed use in this parcel, but the landowner does.
Right.
How does that play out?
Well, ultimately, the approval of the general plan has to be approved in the form of an approval by the Board of Supervisors. So there's a hearing process starting at the Planning Commission and then at the Board. So everyone's going to have the ability to take shot at it in terms of saying, I dislike this on this block, or I approve it on this block. So everyone will have that opportunity. The other thing that I think is really important for the group to understand is that just because you designated mixed use doesn't mean the planning stops. In fact, in every case in the county where we've, at least in an unincorporated area, where we've established mixed use designation, we follow along with a more focused zoning district called the Plant Unit for Keon Zoning District. We've done that in Verdeo, which I recently adopted the last summer. And that's where you get into some of the nitty-gritty details, which I'm sure a lot of folks are interested in, is do you want to encourage certain kinds of land uses within the retail designation? For example, we've had numerous comments about auto repair and auto-related uses in certain blocks on Myappian. That is your opportunity to start focusing in on the blocks in terms of either providing for a land use permit process for specific kinds of retail activities, or saying clearly that it's not allowed and it's to be directed into at another location. That's where you would do that under the land unit P1. So that would be a next step, and that provides another opportunity to get down to a more of a micro level of the block and how it functions.
So now is the time to think about the bigger picture, which is where do you want commercial, where do you want retail, where do you want housing, and then later is the specifics of what kind of
algorithm.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Did I understand you correctly that you need to get move forward with this before you even consider the traffic ramifications?
What I mean is, in order to do an environmental impact report, we have to do a traffic analysis. It has to be a part of an environmental impact report. And in order to do that, we did that in 2003, but we are revising the development potential that was identified in 2003 for that. So we've got to go back and do the traffic analysis over again and look at the potential development in terms of units and commercial square footage and look and see what does that mean in terms of the traffic impacts on the roads. It's requiring a lot.
Do you live outside?
I live in the county.
Do you not live outside?
I do not live outside.
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
And I know that we had discussed having a town hall meeting, but realized that we couldn't really do this without first giving an orientation to the MAC and about all this information. Have you thought about a timeline of when we might be able to go for the community, or is that something that we want to work with the MAC on?
I think it's something that I would recommend it be sponsored by the MAC. I mean, I think that in some cases you may be tired of listening to staff constantly on and on about stuff. In order for us to get clear sense of where the community is going, I think at some level the MAC's got to step in and say, this is the direction we want to take it.
So I'm wondering if the MAC would like to create a subcommittee to work with at in our office to put together an all-community person back in our subcommittee to do the planning and all that, help them for the planning and do some of the outreach that's actually very back in that field.
We can consider that. I don't think we're going to take action on tonight. But we'll certainly look at that. Yes, Mr. Harvey.
On your master, I couldn't identify the statistics for how much percent-wise would be residential and how much would be the business retailing.
Okay.
That quarter that you should have.
I can get it to them before I add
But you don't have a ballpark.
I don't.
And then, of course, the follow-up question to that is, how does that compare with other municipalities?
What would the conditions today?
Pardon me?
What would the existing conditions today?
Yeah.
We can take a look at that.
Yeah. And then I didn't see the parks either.
Well, you know, that again, we identified a couple of locations where there have been discussions about park sites. For example, this block, this is block 12, this would be the library. We're not showing any mixed-use development potential on this, but this here is going to stay. And it's actually, it functions in a way as a park or a recreational public space.
And we have had one in Elsa Brand, don't you think?
It's been one of Eleanor's causes for many years of getting park.
Well, she has one on at Cheese Park, but that's a rich
right.
Nothing in Elsa Brand.
You might have a reading garden.
Yeah.
He's going to go over to Rudy. I can see that.
And just part of the call from the charrette, there was some sentiment that up around the Boys and Girls Club in that area, and really interesting location for some kind of park recreation facility in competition with the Boys and Girls Club.
How far can you build that?
Sorry? How close? Well, there are setback requirements in the creek.
Yeah.
Depending on the creek, it's much as setback requirements. I forgot what the exact numbers are on the setback. Appian Creek is a little different.
I have one other question. Back to the issue of things like, you know, the library being fixed or churches or some of the private schools.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, some of the places in town, we have former commercial areas that are now dedicated to the youth. And I'm just wondering, in the event that a school were to decide to move and a school is placed in an area that would make sense for a certain type of development, how does that wind up?
Well, it would certainly be feasible for the landowner at that point to come back to the county and make a request for consideration of general plan amendment study. So let's say, I think you're talking about Elson Bronte Christian High School.
Right. School there.
Right. They have a campus. They've established a campus. They've converted a former shopping center into a school campus. Let's say they decide they want to expand and live in another site elsewhere, and they're going to sell the property. Well, they would certainly have the ability to come to the county request a general plan amendment study to redesignate it to another
county process later.
I just want to go back to something Wendy asked before, this chart of the comparison of land use scenarios, because it's still not clear to me that the potential scenarios here are additional to the existing dwelling units, for instance, because and the existing commercial space. If you start adding these together, actually, if you add the existing dwelling units to the draft ER from 03, then you're going to end up higher number than the general plan build-out. And the whole point all the way along was to do something that would lower the numbers from the general plan build-out.
Let me caution you on that. What I did is, with the totals that you have there for Alexander Road and Appian Road, we're using commercial square footage for Zillow. That takes the sites that I had identified as having mixed-use development potential and assumes that at some point in the future, they turn over and they redevelop, private redevelopment, into some mixed-use pattern. And so it assumes that then the commercial, which is on that site, goes away. So it's a restructuring of the land use on that parcel.
So this is only the mixed-use designated.
That's right.
Okay.
Do you want to ask, if you
want to
go back?
My brain just can't hold that information.
Karen?
Just to get some initial path correction from the back, if we can maybe get some kind of a pulse as to when a good time to have a town hall meeting would be, then perhaps Pat and our office can work on doing some kind of a timeline working back.
You get to it, yeah.
Right, if the MAC believes that after, you know, when school begins and most of the families are back, that's a good time to have a town hall meeting. Maybe we can have a date for that. So the first draft date and then work back on the things that we have to, you know, maybe develop new employers that we have to develop or something like that.
Well, and also, I think we need to improve a lot of the graphics.
Right. And just kind of, you know, be cognizant of the fact that we wanted to do this several months ago, and that only be able to take us to the next step. So, if you think perhaps in November, October, when school's back, that's a good time, and we can maybe come back at a later date on a timeline, and then maybe get a subcommittee going to help us with some of the outreach and other materials that we can develop.
So that public meeting would be basically with this information prior to traffic analyses. Is that correct? Is that what you're thinking, Karen, that it would be presenting this and then allowing people to provide input and then coming up with the more final that would be analyzed with the traffic? Or
I don't want to get more work for Pat.
Yeah. Well,
the development.
Well, these, because it can be pretty expensive to turn that traffic column on and start running the numbers, it would be preferable to have a number that at least represents the consensus that we can do an analysis and make sure we know what the traffic impacts are, rather than doing multiple scenarios and inventing up real expensive.
Okay.
But you know, we do need to pick some number.
And I think this goes into the planning commission. There's going to be other opportunities for public hearing, public testimony as well. It's just before that point, we want to be able to educate and do as much outreach to the community as possible. So it's not going to, this isn't the only opportunity for the community to hear about this plan. There will be others. Right now, we're going to get as much as many people as we can.
And so, what's the
feeling
of the council about October?
Yes, I think October is good, or late September after the stroll. The stroll would be a good time to promote a community meeting. Maybe not too far after that, because then people will be forgetting and the weather will get mucky. But I also think that as much work as we on the MAC can do prior to that, to coming to our own consensus about this plan so that we can be advocates, a lot of work's gone into this. It doesn't mean closing our minds or ears to the public, but I would encourage us to work towards building moratorium and towards getting an adoption so that we can have a little bit more control. So if we could do that parallel, if we could continue to work with Pat and define the things that seem reasonable to define and set a public meeting for presenting the plan and getting feedback defined feedback for defined elements of the plan. I'm not sure what I mean by that, but that could be a productive meeting. That's what I would advocate for.
Yeah, talking about things that have been discussed without me in the loop. She keeps talking about moratoriums, and I asked, moratorium on what? Moratorium on building within the general plan change area, or what? What are you talking about?
What we're asking for is just information on how a moratorium process works.
What is the moratorium process? What is it? What
that's
is
what
it?
He's going to get to.
No, can I just get
to it? Yeah, you're being really vague.
Marilyn, a moratorium, I think what Susan's referring to is when if there were to be a moratorium, let's say we come up, there seems to be more or less a type of consensus after this public meeting on this is a good plan. It's still going to be time between that people thinking this is a good plan, if that's what happens, then until it's approved by the Board of Supervisors and can be put into practice. And during that period of time, if the community decides that they don't want anything else to happen so that current designations can't be used during that time, it waits until the new designation is put in place.
So that makes the building more time.
It accounts for
yes. That makes the building more time. You've got a lot of projects right now that are in the wings on APM Way, so that means what the effect of that would be to stop any building or any new project.
It would stop within new projects, I believe, from being approved at the county.
There are going to be some legal things that it probably, if something so far is in a process at a certain point, it won't be bound by a moratorium. It's because they don't want lawsuits about that.
It's
so,
essentially, once somebody has an entitlement to do something, receives an entitlement, it cannot impose a moratorium.
I'd like to know more about that. That's really good.
Back to you.
We have a question here from Mr. Hardy.
I was just wondering if insurance rates are governed by the proximity or the availability of fire protection.
Yes.
And we all know there seems to be a lack of fire protection, or at least with us to the first time in time.
Oh, you have a mirror.
Somehow that resolution has been in process for 5 years or since 1999, depending on who you want to believe or the stem of the day. Now, should that enter into any of this redevelopment planning?
I don't think so. I think that what we have...
So it's not important?
No, I didn't see that at all. In fact, we're pushing for meetings on this to get this resolved. So that, and there is a council meeting, we hope that the City of Richmond will approve on the 20th of this month. So,
what if they just assume it on July 31st?
What both chiefs have said is that they hope to have it implemented in sometime in June and active and start on the parish medical part of it in the last part of the year. So they're looking for July 1st implemented.
One reason is perhaps at the next meeting, if everyone came back with some draft, with a really initial timeline on outreach and when we could possibly have a community meeting in either late September or October. The agenda for next month is the creation of a circulation to help us with doing outreach. That might be a good thing. So that you can make an action item for that.
Are the transportation funds still available that were set aside for Navajo's livable community?
Yes, those ones are actually available since 2009. They will be available. That's what
Better Jacobs is going to do. I thought they were scheduled for the old city.
No, there's a special fund category that was created under Measure J, which was the extension of the housing and transportation. So you can't touch the
resources.
How much money is that?
We're going past our deadline, and we've got a lot on the agenda, and I want to thank you very much.
Can I just summarize? I heard that there was an interest in getting information about. So we'll come back with some sort of memo explaining what that is and what you have to do to establish.
Right.
Second, I think suggestion from parents, so we'd like a timeline. How do you get to a forum and town hall in this meeting? Right. Sometime early fall, I guess it is.
I'm just a member of the audience. However, I was wondering if you yourself would be available to talk with some small group, some people in Mr. Grant regarding this prior to the town hall meeting, because my experience with the town hall meeting is that we have many people come to the meeting who have just found out about community development and we're unprepared, and we have leaders, people who have one point, they're not educational as they could be if more people came with informed information. So, like if an organized group or a group of people wanted to get together with you and ask questions. Would you be available?
Schedule committee, I can meet with any group that's interested in this project. But I can accommodate
we're so hot up here, we're dying. It's really hot up here.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah,
okay.
Is this a topic?
No.
No, that I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. We've already, on the next item on the agenda was the Dr. Gordon, we've already had that report.
Thank you.
And we have a presentation by, or a report by the council.
The main thing is obviously the auto aid to the city and the county. Supervisor Joyette and Chief Director of Fire Chief for the Nonconformity Fire Department submitted a joint letter to the Richmond City Council asking that the city council reestablish an auto aid between the city of County. Also, that while we are in discussions to give payments to the city of Richmond, this would be for San Pablo and the county, since both San Pablo and Contra Costa County normally receive more services from the city of Richmond going into our jurisdiction than us going to theirs. While we're in that discussion, is to have a reinstatement of auto aid while all this is going on as kind of a friendly gesture. And so there's been discussions in the past with Bill Lindsay and the Chief Banks, and that they both seem very open to it. I know it's on the agenda for next Tuesday, so we're expecting to see big crowd to the city version. The big thing is that the city council with City of Richmond has to authorize the reestablishment of auto aid. It was eliminated by city council action 4 years ago, and I think because we've now had a change in administration, it's no longer Isaiah Turner, it's now there's still going to be the different fire chief, but we're really going to get some really productive discussions going on. And it is, I think, frankly, it's a good thing that we have a different team of people, because we're really dealing with egos in the past and all that. So that's a big thing. So show up to the city council meeting on Tuesday and voice your concerns. For those who have emails, many of you received my email, I think either yesterday or today, with our new newsletter from Supervisor Joya. If you don't have it, please let me know. I downloaded all the email I had and sent out everything that I could send. If you don't have it, you can always send on to our website and download that. If not, just put it in Tom, I'll be sure to send you one. In terms of getting a resident deputy, I've been meeting with residents in East Richmond Heights, which they're going through a similar thing as the Delta Brandy. They're looking at having a resident deputy as well. They have about 1,500 parcels in East Richmond Heights. And it'll be about $100 a year per parcel for if this passes, to have a 40-hour a week resident sheriff deputy. So they're seriously looking into that. If they want, they obviously three resident deputies, $300 a year. So in addition to that, they're also talking about, and I know this has been a discussion with several people here, annexing into the city of El Cerrito. The big problem with them is that East Richmond Heights is divided. There's spheres of influence. Some portion of the East Richmond Heights area has the El Cerrito sphere of influence. Other portions of East Richmond Heights have the Richmond sphere of influence. And you can't really go from one city jurisdiction if you're in another sphere of influence into another without doing some grand LAFCO permit thing. So that's really a long-term look for them, but the short-term is they're going to put a lot of their effort, I think, into passing an attempt to build a little bit. And that's all that I've got.
Could you give the address and timing of the Richmond meeting?
The East Richmond Heights meeting?
No,
next Tuesday.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's at 7 o'clock. And I'm not sure, they haven't published their agenda yet, so I'm sure it'll be out either tomorrow or Friday. And it'll be somewhere in there. If they're smart, they'll put it on in the beginning, the first part of the agenda rather than the last part of the agenda. I'm sure it's going to start with so much publicity that they're sure they're going to have a lot of people.
It's 1401 Marina Way South.
And the entrance is at the back of the building?
Yes.
So we said,
yeah. if you can find the building in the first place.
Yeah, on his, thank you for sending the newsletter. County.
We worked very hard on that, by the way.
You did?
Well, it was a staff effort.
Oh, good.
It was a group effort.
Well, good. I just wanted to comment on one of the things, the bill against illegal dumpers. Now, it says that Supervisor Joyett strongly supports AB 2253 by Hancock. But what it'll do, basically, for our area, because of the way the problem is nothing. Because you have to actually be there, catch the guy, get his license plate, then hope somebody can find him. The kind of illegal dumping we have is just hit and run. They jump it and then they're gone. So it's not really going to help the problem here in El Tabrani.
It's, you know, we can only pass laws that we can only pass laws. But we have to be sometimes smart for bad reasons on how we pass a law. And so a lot of times, you know, I think that law really targets more habitual dumpers than kind of sporadic dumpers, as you can call it. And so, we'll, you know, this is the first part in terms of a series of laws or, you know, kind of enforcement that we're looking at. But I think this is a good step. Because right now, there are no laws that allow us to town vehicles like that.
Well, how about, you know, you pursue grants for livable communities and smart roads and all that. How about pursuing grants to clean places up? I mean, how about pursuing
it's
money?
Easy.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if you could have money you know?
It would be excellent if we had money to do that. But right now, things are well drying up on the federal level, on the state level. There's not a lot of grants out there for us. And we'll, you know, from everyone from our community development staff to our CAO's office to, you know, even our health department look at grants that are available at the federal level and at the state level on what we can do, either with illegal dumping or anything else. And if they find anything, they would go after it.
I hope
right
so.
Now,
we got
you know, right now, there aren't a lot of grants out there. You know, I mean, just looking at anti-violence, there aren't a lot of grants, you know,
anti-violence.
So we are working on it. Believe in the future.
How many residents were involved?
There are about 1,600 parcels in the East Richmond Heights area. And how we define the East unincorporated portion of East Richmond Heights was we opened up the Thomas side and we looked at the portion that was unincorporated and we called up the assessor and said, these are the boundaries, tell us how many parcels.
And you're going to say how much of a fine?
To have a resident deputy is about $160,000 a year. For a 40-hour shift a week for resident deputy. But that averages out to about 100 per parcel per year. They also looked at how much the tax increase would cost if they annexed into the city of El Cerrito. And it's about, there's about right now, I think the last look that they had was about a $300 difference. And that would pay for the 300 deputies. So they're kind of value. If they want to stay in the county and pay for more deputies, but if they want to put their efforts into annexing into the city of El Cerrito.
I have a question for you about the police district. The new project, like the Astro project, there's going to be an election and then probably pass, and then each parcel will pay about $200 a year to the county for the police service district. And I want to know what services they get. Let's get regular deputies. Maybe coming by, maybe not, maybe coming by once a month, or do they actually get some specified services in there?
That's a good question. I didn't look into it for you. I don't know it. And perhaps a better person to answer that is on the board. And I can give them a call and say, you know, perhaps get you some research into that and then the next presentation get a memo of your orange on that.
Any other questions?
One's just brief. Is Supervisor Joy pushing to get another assessment district going here in North Carolina?
Yes.
I know Sheriff Ruff says it's a groundswell of interest.
Well, there is. And unfortunately, the resident deputies were paid for by federal grant several years ago. It was a grant to Marzal, which is something called the Clinton Grant or something like that. Clinton went away, and a new person came into office, and the Clinton Cops grant went away.
The Clinton Easton?
And so when those grants went away, the resident deputies that were paid for by those grants also went away. Because of that, there were no resident deputies in any part of Contra Costa. And yet, there is a groundswell. I mean, you know, you take a look, looking at it, you help the grannies because you want more resident deputies or more as a sheriff, but you're also looking at it. I know in District 2 and District 5, they're also looking at it. So, you know, is it something that we're pushing for? We're not going to push for it that's people that the residents want, but if that's what the residents want, then we have to move those parts to the
team. I think we can only have it.
So the residents definitely need to be in addition to?
It would be in addition to the existing service. So if you put the service as low, then you would have resident deputy with not a certain service. And the resident deputy can work a regular 8-hour shift Monday through Friday, or they could also change their shift nighttime, daytime, weekends, whatever, so that they're on call and they're around when there maybe is a higher percentage of calls into the sheriff's department, when there are more crimes happening in a particular neighborhood, they can focus their attention to that neighborhood and move their shifts around.
Would a resident deputy be hanging out here in El Sobrano, or would they just be ready to come?
You have to think of the realistic thing. An 8-hour shift, they're going to be in El Sobrano in the area that pays for them.
Okay.
Are they going to be here all the time? If there's a call somewhere else in El Sobrano, they're not going to be in the downtown area.
Well, they would just be in El Sobrano.
Yes, but their job is to stay within the area that pays.
Just an observation, on this illegal dumping, that's probably been going on for many years, but I think it's just more noticeable now, since about 5 or 6 years ago, in the middle of the night, the Richmond City Council signed a new contract with Richmond Sanitary, $99 a week with them. For their franchise. The next morning at 12:01 a.m., Richmond Sanitary sold out, I forget who the big conglomerate is. They promptly tripled the rate. Okay. Now you take a load of a leading from Ivy to the dump, and that's 30 smacks. Ben Levin. Now, the guy who does the cleanups around here for the local whatever. He charges $100. Why should I put $100 with the dump? Because that would be $45 for building itself. So he just dumps it on San Battle Dam Road or anywhere else. So we're stuck with it. And being an Elsa Granny without representation anywhere in the county, we get stuck with the problem. And then on this police business, I thought we had a special assessment in the county where all the unincorporated areas had some kind of P3 assessment in the county tax for police protection. And then they want to turn around and charge us for having said, yes, we had a deputy. What am I missing here? You're putting more deputies in the county jail, I know, right? Okay. Why? Because they're getting sued. Okay.
Thank you, Sheriff. We're going to move on. We've already had a report so we're under short discussion on this. Quite a few items. Also, we're on the next candidate this morning for the election. I gave the material in the text to those people that are up for re-election, and that is Marilyn Zuck and Paul Zuck and Samuel Zuck. So if anybody else wants additional information other than what I put in the past, let me know.
Did you get my revision over email? Okay, well, there is one revision, and can I say it now in the meeting? Because your deadline is, isn't it coming up here?
July
7th. Well, they have my wrong phone number, and if you look at your email, you see that revision has to be made in my candidate information.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I don't know where they got the phone number.
Perhaps you can call the elections office then.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not supposed to give it to her?
You can give it to her, or,
I'll be glad to call. Yeah. I thought that was what the whole idea was us getting this from you.
Well,
was.
Please
call. Okay.
Yeah, the Bible was distributed.
All right. Then,
it's your responsibility.
Everybody has to file themselves.
The one.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
You have to file yourself.
I understand that.
I already did that.
Now we're on both to include the change of plan. The copies were received and sent to the members by email, and I was sent to me again from the Commodore's team. So, again, if there's a motion to approve the budget final.
Okay, we'll approve the final.
Is there a second? There's a second. Any discussion?
This approval is interest
includes.
It
includes the amendments, yeah.
This is a map I got. It's not real clear. I mean, where's, you know, here's an area
where the people live.
Where people live?
Where the council
members live.
Okay.
That area is beyond Fort Greene.
How do they have to pick this area?
That's
Camp Pavlo. Okay.
That's
all
that.
That's the map
they
created.
Yeah.
The jurisdiction for the
country. Yeah.
Talk to Jim Rogers about
that. Believe me, I'd rather not.
It's not us today.
Okay. No, it isn't. It's Camp Pavlo.
Any other discussion? Those in favor?
Who
is
there?
Opposed?
Abstain.
Okay.
Substain, there you go. I don't want to have Camp Pavlo as a member of that. Yeah.
Make a public letter. Parks and Fire recommending the petition be signed by all residents of Camp Pavlo on San Pablo County and Bay Road. The petition would cover the service area L100 to the lighting district. And I know that. Bruce and
Beth
and Wright are both here to address this.
You could skip one, right?
SB1-3. Oh, I did.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine that people are here, but I just want to make sure we don't leave it.
Yeah.
Well,
we should back up a minute. She's right. I did skip SB1-3. Vote 2.
0.3.
Let me see that again. Where's that again? Where is that thing? Where's the agenda? Is it in here?
There. No, I handed it out.
Oh, you handed it out. Okay. I'm getting two of them. Anybody want an agenda? You might want one, Mr. Harvey. You like parks and all that kind of good stuff. You like. What are you going to do? Use a swing set? What are you going to do?
I attach to the proposed agenda. Sort of a, not really a summary, but kind of a summary of what's in the land use study, in the El Chidone Valley Park study, just what the priorities were in that already. So,
the thing that I don't see on here.
There were a couple questions that you asked that I thought were, well, one, the first question had to do with the R9 funding part. The R9 being having representatives in Richmond and El Chidone, that's not true. That, as far as I know,
there are residents on the R9 that are from the city of Richmond.
Oh, there are?
There
shouldn't be.
And the other thing that I wanted on here to address was the fact that Richmond could possibly match the funds that the El Chidone residents are putting in the party.
Yeah, that's under number 3, the City of Richmond Parks and Maintenance Follow-Up Redeveloper Fees. And anyway, that has a lot. In my mind, that item, number 3 on the agenda under the R9 priorities, has to do with those jurisdictions and the...
In your mind, that's what that is? Mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to do with, and I think that would be a question for Supervisor Joy in general, what the constitution of the R9 is, the charter, and who can be a member of it.
Yeah.
That would be something we could, well, I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I was just thinking, I think in this meeting, one of the things that's going to be important for the R9 to do is to provide an overview of the R9, the purview of the R9, the history of the R9, and the challenges that the R9 faces, to just so that everybody kind of is coming from the same knowledge base in discussing these further issues.
Yeah, sorry, we're discussing this. Would you like to be the person? Oh, you're not on R9 anymore. Okay.
I thought the R9 were monies collected from unincorporated El Sobrany from developments here. Why would Richmond residents be overseeing those funds when Richmond is a different jurisdiction?
Well, that's part of my question, and that's what I wrote to Susan. I want to add it to the agenda. That if it continues to be a joint R9, then there should be matching funds. The city of Richmond is not putting any funds into R9, and I feel that that's
But it didn't used to be Richmond residents. How do these Richmond residents get on there? It has to be appointed by Supervisor Joy.
I think it's always been that way from what
I didn't know that. It didn't used to be.
But that's the reason I wanted to add it.
Good.
Is that reasonable to continue to have that way when the city of Richmond is not putting funds in?
Yeah, very good.
So, I sent an email to Susan to add that to the agenda. So that I want to be clear that it's on the agenda. I think it should be made clearer rather than just
R9 membership, I think, is R9 membership.
Membership and fees.
Yeah, there's a conflict of interest with Richmond on there. Well, it really is, if you think about it.
We want to say fees and membership.
Do you know how much money you have to play with this year?
I don't know.
I got it right here.
Okay.
There's some money that's disappeared, by the way, since I first started looking at this. You got $300,000 right now.
Do you know if Lisa Crane is going to be coming to the meeting as well?
Tomorrow?
No. The one that's at the...
You mean the 22nd?
Right. It'd be good to have her...
I'm not sure. I think she said she couldn't make it.
So perhaps you can send her an email, or somebody from our night can send her an email to see the names.
Mm-hmm. And what, just to represent?
Well, because their staff are R9, because they're the staff for R9.
Right.
That we should, if you're going to have a meeting with R9 and Matt, you should have staff of R9 there to attend the meeting.
Okay.
And do you know if you're inviting anybody from the city of Richmond Park and Rec Department to attend as well?
Well, I guess we're having this discussion now. What's the purpose of the meeting? The purpose of the meeting, according to John, who sort of initiated it, was my feeling, was that he wanted to go over the park study and find out if our priorities are the same, or how the MAC and R9 could work together to possibly set up an assessment district in order to fund, or some other way, look at how we're funding and prioritizing our park development.
Now, what initiated this is I talked to Supervisor Joy about the structure of the R9 and so we need to have a meeting to talk about this.
Because I have a communication between John, Supervisor Joya, and Don Bastian, which is about something else.
For our office to invite somebody from the city of Richmond Park and Rec Department to come to that meeting.
If that's what the MAC wants on the agenda, sure.
It feels like there's so much to talk about. I'm wondering whether it makes sense at this juncture to do that. I'm not sure the purpose of that person, but I feel like there's a lot of clarification, that there's so many discussions, there's a lot of information that needs to be relayed, just for the MAC and R9 has never met before.
Right, but the thing is, you're talking about having Richmond contribute to an R9 fund.
Yeah, but I feel like that discussion kind of needs to be had
first
before we... But, and a decision about whether we want to approach Richmond about that needs to be made by the two bodies before Richmond gets involved in that. I mean,
yeah, we should clarify where we're coming from and what our...
That was my whole purpose, not whole purpose, but also being a part in of the grant and not have the funds all going to part in the city of Richmond.
Well, of course.
I'm kind of in favor if you could ask for money from a particular jurisdiction that may be in.
We haven't,
but
we haven't talked about fundraising or funding parts.
No, but you're talking about it at that particular meeting.
But
so the jurisdictions that are impacted by that, you know, they would like to have the respect of being there and at least being at the beginning of the discussion.
But there are other granting organizations who are not invited.
No, what I heard Barbara say was asking for the city of Richmond to contribute to R9 funds. So if you're going to have that discussion, I would say it's prudent to ask somebody from the city of Richmond to be there at that meeting instead of it's kind of, you know, instead of saying we met, we want the city of Richmond to contribute to the money. Now we're inviting you to the discussion.
It's not clear to me that would be the outcome anyway. That we want. Once we all understand the issues and what's there, that's the outcome. So it feels like we need to flesh out whether that is or is not.
Okay.
And what
I'm
are
just saying that if that's one of the things you're going to be talking about. It's just good to invite somebody from the city of Richmond to be there.
I hear some reluctance from some of our members to discuss the fact that city of Richmond isn't contributing to the R9.
Yes, and that's a good question.
Oh, and I don't quite understand that when the R9 committee is made up of both city of Richmond and Ashburn residents, and the parks so far are being put, and I know there's a problem in putting them into Elster Grand because of the maintenance issue, but that's one of the issues I want to discuss too, is not the fact that we can't do it, but how do we make it work?
Exactly what the R9 talks about. So, I mean, it's not an adversarial position at all, but I think we need to clarify what the R9, as you were saying, challenges are, and also what their charter is.
One of the reasons I think that initially there are, if it's joint, R9 is joint, is to try to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's figuring out how we can work together. I just feel like we all need more information so that it doesn't become adversarial at all, because I think we all need to fully understand and think through so everybody knows who does what. What can R9 do? What is R9? What's the purpose? What does Richmond do? So we fully understand, and then we can work together with Richmond. I know
so
that.
So, in order to have that discussion about what Richmond does, wouldn't you want somebody who's visiting Richmond to say, to be there, to, instead of having a third person answer what Richmond does, is to have somebody from Richmond Parks and Rec, you know?
And that's fine. I just worry.
They're not going to be able to answer the question that Bill Lindsay can't directly answer, which is what's happening to the park agency.
It's a good idea. They can certainly advocate for it. Better than we can advocate.
We have a question.
Yeah, well, we don't know what we
want to
do.
If R9 is comprised of Richmond residents and Elton Brandon residents, first of all, that's new to me.
Yeah.
Second of all, if a person from Richmond sitting on an R9 committee, which I would have thought up until this very moment, that it's under the auspices of the county, something is definitely wrong. And I think it's definitely wrong, and I think that person should be challenged as to that position on the R9 committee.
Well, I think
and as far as that general position, I think all of these committees could use a healthy and spirited debate on a number of issues. And I just went through this laundry list here, lack of a more sophisticated term, and it's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous.
In what way?
It's a wish list for the city of Richmond. Okay. And for the what Contra Costa County School District. I don't know what's going on here.
That was the El Sobrante Valley Park study that was done years ago. I mean, I wasn't here then, but that was not supposed to be El Sobrante.
So all they did was to buy the land or build a $50,000 tent for the Earth First or whatever that outfit is behind Kelsey School or Jenkins School. And the purpose of that tent was to keep the wildlife out of their park. And I guess that.
Okay. Is that Ottaway? Yay! I'm going to take care of what you've asked for, Barbara, and change the agenda. I would like to recommend that this agenda be changed to reflect the questions and concerns you have and that you email me, such that this becomes more general, that we still have introductions. And then we have the park study or whatever, comments by Supervisor Joya, whatever he wants to park, whatever he wants to talk about. And then we go into, and maybe this will be the staff, I'm not sure, but R9 membership and funding questions, just generally, I'm going to just, this detail of our priorities, I'm just going to hide away. The people who are talking can refer to these or not, but we'll talk about the purview and challenges. And then I suggest that we have the MAC also talk about what their parks and land use priorities or interests are. And then we'll just see where we match up. But I'll just generally put R9 membership and their charter in place of number 3, and then funding issues, questions. And then make it. Then the MAC can also. And then the MAC can do their parks and land use priorities. If that's all right with you.
Sure.
Can I make a motion? Because we've got an agenda item here.
Yeah.
My motion would be if the El Sobrante MAC write a letter to Supervisor Joya, ask him how he happens to appoint people that live in Richmond to the R9. He's the one that makes the appointment.
I mean,
that's the whole deal here.
I think we're going to get that response, and that's part of the reason we're having the meeting, so I don't think that a letter is necessary. Yes,
I have a couple of things. On your second sheet, item 1, green cross, no cross green, no cross art, also the mission.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, and then number 2, we said just the in that roadside, only by the wood,
You know what this is from?
Yeah, this is from the park.
So I made a motion. So that R9 is gone. No, if somebody can say where he died. Does anybody second my motion?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's being developed.
The interesting thing is that one of the Supervisor Joya did not start the appointment on R9 for Richmond. It was done years before. I was on R9 for many years and chair. I'm a resident of Richmond. And one of the reasons was that it makes it easier if you're talking to Richmond, from Richmond, I'm serving on R9. And there were many, many times when R9 contacted Richmond and got into partnership, like the opening of the end of Cindy Kennedy Grove, and Richmond wanted to charge an additional $50,000. And we pointed out to them, no, you really shouldn't do that because it is helps the community on both sides of the line, putting that down. So there are some reasons. No way should the Richmond residents be a majority member of R9, but it's always good to get at least one or two there because then you've got a connection to the city too.
I just made a motion. Okay, I just made a motion. Thank you for your input.
There was a motion on the floor. Was there a second?
Okay, motion died.
Okay. So we're back to...
Okay, can I make a motion to revise the agenda per our conversation? And then submit it. I'm taking it to the R9 tomorrow night, so they may also have revisions. But with the...
Could you repeat that motion, please?
The motion was to amend the agenda as per our discussion.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'll second it. Okay, there's a second. Any other discussion?
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain. I don't even understand what I'm voting on.
Okay. This agenda.
Oh, good.
Okay, we are on, now we are on, Public Works Department's letter recommending a petition be signed by all the residents affected by the lack of light on San Pablo Down Road between Valley View and May Road. Petition would cover joining area L190, the lighting district. It's my understanding in talking to the two residents that are here that they were not talking about going all the way from Valley View to May Road.
Correct.
That they were talking only a portion of that.
May Road to La Honda Road, which is 6 tenths of a mile.
And they're wondering how it got extended. And we're wondering also how the petition would cover joining county service area L100, which was not discussed. I have a letter here that Lena and I comprised and was sent to Councilman Joya or whatever he is. And the petitions are on the back. There's 160 signatures from neighbors between May Road and La Honda Road on both the north and south side of the street. Linda and I walked those streets for 3 days. I also have a copy of the Karen, so I need to use it for a second.
Did you get that out?
Yeah. Yeah, it was back to Mr. Joya. Because when we had the original meeting, we were asking for street lights, and we were told that there was the possibility that there would be an assessment. However, we were not told to put on the petition anything about an assessment. We were not told to put on the petition anybody's parcel number. Number one, nobody in the right mind would be extremely responsible. I would be extremely responsible, and I would expect somebody to do it to me. Basically, because of identity theft and the danger of all sorts of things. So it's all in this letter to John Joya, what we are disappointed about. And the thing that I want to stress is between the 6 tenths of a mile, there are 18 missing people with electricity. So the only thing that needs to be put up there is the extension bar, the light, and a bulb. Now, we're not asking for 15 lights. We're asking for 4 or 5 lights for 6 tenths of a mile on either side of the street. And according to, who told us about the cost of the street? And also, I would also like to bring up Alex Anaya is also involved in this. He was in the original meeting. And he was confused as well. I would like to know how the money, if there is any money, where it's going to come from if it does not come from the residents. Number one, 60% of the residents in that 6 tenths of a mile is an apartment complex. So they are not paying property tax. So the rest of us would be penalized for what they're not going to pay. At least 60% are living apartment complexes. And they have, and then of course we also have a petition. We're asked to also make a petition of people that were either involved in auto accidents, getting in and out of your driveway, theft, vandalism, etc. And it's all written down on the petition, people that have been in auto accidents. I didn't really call through for all the time because I wasn't aware of it. We were working both sides of the street, but she did more of that than I did. But my main problem is if we're going to be assessed
I heard $15 a year per resident or per parcel. Now, from Main Road to Valley View Road is 81 parcels, which comes to approximately $1,200 and some dollars. And I would like to know why it's going to cost the county of El Pagani to run four streetlights for a year for $1,200. Being that the utility poles do not have to be put up, they're already there, and the electricity is already on the utility poles. So what we're asking for is the arms, the lights, and the bulbs. I can't answer that question. Where do we go to get the answer?
Well, we would have to talk to Public Works.
That's not going any good.
We tried that.
They're not listening to us. We were not. Didn't go in with a lodging district in mind. None of that was brought up at the original meeting until the day at very tail end. Supervisor Joy said that this was an extremely safety hazard and there was no way that it could be taken care of. And the light bulbs that were out, the Alex to go out and fix them, those weren't the light bulbs we were talking about anyway, so that didn't matter. Okay, they were down somewhere else. They weren't where we were. And at the last, it was brought up about, you know, you might have to get in the lodging district from Joya said that would be as a last resort because of this being such a safety issue because of a crime. You have 160 signatures here, and a third of these people have been a victim of an automobile accident, a burglary, vandalism, auto theft. I mean, how much more do you need? A third of those people have been victimized in just this little bitty area.
6 tenths of a mile.
And we didn't get everybody's signatures by any means.
So what does it mean?
Well, I'm ready to do so.
I'm going to ask Terrence if he has any information on this.
I don't. You know, one possible scenario is why.
You think they need this for signatures, and they are
right,
there.
That was
what?
That was the Public Works. So
no, that wasn't. That was okay.
No. The signatures that were needed were the subject for Public Works.
What I mean is, if you enjoy, I'm going to interrupt you. I think this needs to be a special meeting with
no,
right? With yes, with
no, it doesn't. Everybody should hear what's going on.
Well, they just
go ahead, go through hoops, go through one hoop, now you've got some business, go through another hoop. He was at the meeting, Joy was at the meeting. This is, I'm tired of him passing the buck.
I'm telling you that I'll try to get a meeting set up between you two.
We've already done that.
Well, there has to be some resolution. And we've done what we were told to do.
And now we're saying, oh, no, that's not what we told you to do.
I hear your frustration.
Well, you hear my frustration. She's had people living in her lot. But she doesn't have any life.
But all I can do is to check with Supervisor Joya about what these additional funds that he was referring to are and pursue it from that. And I got a meeting with you folks there to state what you're saying. It hasn't been any good.
Barbara, nothing. Everything that was said at the original meeting has been totally turned around.
Yeah, I'd just like to suggest, because I think the good thing in all of this is I think there's complete consensus that everyone agrees that there needs to be lights there. Like the Mac agrees, you want them, the supervisor thinks
they want them. So
I think what we need to do, there's also some communication issues, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether we can't just put things in writing so that we can understand, at least at our next council meeting, we can just ask, because it sounded like this was presented maybe as a last resort. So what are the options? What are the alternatives that the residents have for getting the light?
What was presented as a last resort?
Yes.
And the lighting district that you mentioned was a last resort. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's even brought up.
Yeah.
It's not brought up.
I just like to have that
as a last resort.
So I'm just saying, so that we understand, this is
what's going on out there.
We understand if there are any options for them and what if there's an option or if the option would move out. Should we all understand?
and then they can move forward. If this is the only option, I guess we write the letter to the supervisor, just asking for written clarification about for this stuff. What are the options? What are the actions?
Okay, Julie, are you making a motion that we write a letter to the supervisor?
I'd like to discuss that or second it and then make a discussion on that.
Okay. You make the motion?
I make the motion that we write a letter requesting a written response to what the alternatives are.
Okay. I'll just say one more thing, that the people that we did approach and have signed, that we have had signing petitions are a lot of retired people. They're being bonded and taxed to death, and they are not willing to pay for this.
There's a helicopter up there. Maybe we should close our door.
One lady on the petition has 7 applicants in Brussels property. One lady. 7. And yet the CHP's records, and parents are supposed to get that information back in February, so there doesn't have any answers. The problem is that if they don't make a report with the CHP, CAC doesn't have a record of it. If you go to Clue, who's in Sacramento, and that's what the insurance agents have to do whenever they take any money out on a claim, they have to make a report to Clue to tell them, I need to claim out for an automobile accident on XYZ Street, okay? And they have a record of every single accident, every single address. I gave that to parents. I gave that to Lonnie Hunt and Hancock's office. Nobody can get through to Clue, and matter of fact, neither one of them knew anything about Clue. So nobody's doing their job is what it boils down to.
Okay, and you know, you and I talked on the phone a long time about this, and I said that we bring it up here, and then we see what we can do, and that's what we're going to do. And I don't think we can do any more discussion on this other than, you know, go ahead with this motion. And the motion was to write a letter to Supervisor Joya asking him what alternatives there are to joining the lighting district.
We don't know. Well, I'm sure
that's why we're looking at alternatives.
You don't know what the other options are.
I'm not
which
saying.
We don't know.
Well, see, you're going to get the same one around we got.
Well, then I'll have to address that on the ground when I get it. So right now, there's a motion and a second. We're in discussion.
Okay. Being as how Supervisor Joy is on the West Contra Costa Transportation Advisory Committee, he would know about any upcoming grants that could be out there to be used to put, I think, maybe one or two lights. I know they'd like more, but I mean one or two lights at least in this area. Yeah, it's better than nothing in this incredibly dangerous area. There's got to be something out there so these people that own these very few parcels, okay? So that I would like that included in the letter. In your capacity, Supervisor Joy, as a member of the WCTAC, could you please look into grant options and make sure that WCTAC is aware of this dangerous situation on Dam Road?
I mean, do you want me to get a hold of Clue and give them every stupid address and then just 6 cents of a mile and say I want every option? Is that what it's going to take? Because Joya can do it, Aaron can do it, nobody else is doing it. I give them the information about Clue and they don't even do anything about it. They didn't even know what it was.
I understand your frustration and I hear it. And I think everybody hears your frustration and we're going to try to address this on this.
I'd just like to request that we maintain a level of respect. We've had this issue, but we understand that you're angry and frustrated, and we're really trying to work with you and try to do what we can to support you. The motion is to write a letter to understand what the alternatives are, to get in writing, because it sounded like in your meeting things were said and it wasn't really clear, and it hasn't been clear to us what the alternatives are to joining a lighting district.
We don't want to join a lighting district.
That's why we want to know, instead of joining a lighting district, but what can happen?
Okay.
People want light. We all want light.
The money somewhere.
What is the option? How can that happen without residents paying for it? That's what we want to know.
We have a motion on the floor, and we're going to go ahead and vote on it. So, any those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay. I'll write the letter if it's okay with the council.
Can you send it to Comptroller? Especially
yes.
Me, because I've been working with these things before you send it to Joanne.
Well, then I'll get input from you, and then I can't.
Well, no, I don't want to give you any input. I just want to see the letter.
I'm
just
like
get input from one person.
You. Yeah, you can't really.
Okay. How about a quicker topic, too?
Yeah, these people really need to see it.
They're the ones that. I mean, when you go walking around, most of them are not really physical. They're up and down, physically able to go up and down these stairs. Both have back, major back problem, surgery. We're walking up and down. My feet told us to do it, get these signatures. I'm not going to send an activist. We do it. And the minute we do it, they get a change.
Okay, and I understand that. I mean, it's not like this is the first time you've told me that.
I know, but it's like. You know, everybody just postpones and just kind of run around in circles.
We're not going to go around in circles.
And nothing gets done. Nothing gets done.
We're going to move on. I'm going to write the letter, and Linda, I think I need your address. I don't know that on the letter to me that you put your address. I know I had
to. It's on the petition.
Is it on the petition?
Or good.
Then I don't need it from my computer.
Oh, my address is off.
Well, I know I got yours. Your husband's a member of the LA.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming, and we're going to move on to the next agenda item. Let's see where we are now.
You're on D11, DI1. D1I, DI1. Where in the hell is this?
So I didn't see any minutes. I didn't see any minutes.
Oh, here it is. Hey, look at that. Is that it? Well, this is the agenda. Where's the minute?
Yeah, there's the agenda, but there are no minutes.
Yeah, there's no minutes. It's just an agenda.
Then you cross off the word.
Oh, okay. Do we ever get minutes?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
They weren't ready to do the packets. That's why
they did. Will you folks email them to us?
So you will come out with the email.
Yeah, that'd be nice since you are subcommittee up there, man.
Yeah,
that'd be real nice. Yay. Who keeps the minutes of that thing?
I took them this time, but we rotated.
Oh, okay.
We need to stop the conversation so that we can go on with it. Okay, do you
want to
comment on the item,
please? Sure. So we had two things that we were discussing as you see on the agenda. We spent the bulk of time, and we had a few members of the public present, so we spent the bulk of time reviewing the materials that Patrick Roach had presented to the MAC during the May MAC meeting, and developing list of questions and concerns. So I don't know that we want to go into any details, I don't think, at this point, but we'll distribute those minutes so that you can see. We went like line by line, and he gave us a set of the policies for Elsa Bronte at the last meeting, and the materials that Patrick distributed to us. One of them was actually the general plan language that is the draft of what he was considering, and I encourage all of the MAC members to go through it line by line, because I think that's still something at some point this whole council, that the subcommittee will bring forward any discussion we've had at some point for the full council to discuss it, and I think we should probably do that so everyone's familiar. So you know what any proposed amendment is looking like, and we have lots of questions and concerns. So perhaps once we get our thoughts together, we can put them in writing and have them, and then I can give it to us. So, we were also talking about
some things that the MAC might be able to consider in the interim period of time, like, you know, one of the things they've talked about is consolidating lots, and, you know, you have lots of fences in between parcels, so we talked about maybe working with the Chamber of Commerce to kind of talk about what are changes that can be implemented to improve circulation downtown, and mostly circulation was what that was addressed. Mm-hmm. And then we were also talking about doing some outreach to other community groups, so we brainstormed a list so that we could go out and talk to community groups, sort of like what Shirley was talking about with Patrick going out, but that, you know, the MAC could go out. We talked about the MAC developing some kind of framework and guidelines for development in El Cervante, that would be something important to just go around and talk to community groups about before having a public meeting and see the evidence quality and perhaps get the general tournament also.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question? Yeah. You left off here, item number three, decide if and when to invite Catherine Couture.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
What, why are you wanting to invite her to a meeting? What is that all about?
Well, she came and she helped us understand how the development process.
Oh, so she did come at some point.
She already came, and so she offered to come back. She offered for the council to come up with some thoughts and questions for her around more specific things that the council might be interested around development guidelines. I don't know. How do you restrict development on slopes of a certain degree? And mm-hmm. is that something that, you know, the council can work towards?
In other words, do you have the power to do that?
What are the things that we're interested in making sure happen here? How do you preserve the suburban rural character? And how do we define that? And then talking with her about how do we come up with guidelines or framework or what are the questions that we would have for her. So she presented really general, and then she was willing to come back and answer specific questions about the specifics that might apply to us.
Yeah, so could you present what your aims are in doing this to the general MAC? I mean, what you're telling me is I don't have any idea about why you're doing this or what you're doing.
Well, the charge,
very good.
The charge of the subcommittee, one of them at least, when it was established, was to come up for the council. This will not just be done by the subcommittee, it would come before the council, but to set up some thoughts and guidelines for when development applications are made to the county, can we have some kind of framework by which decisions about what you want requested of the developer, whether it's approved or disapproved, what can be their framework for making some of those decisions. There's no overall framework right now.
Within that framework, we don't do planning and zoning, but how would you be telling the planning and zoning how we want it done? Is that what you're
It would be something that could be used by planning and zoning, that when it gets closer, the formulation, there could be a meeting with planning and zoning. And yes, the idea would be that anyone working on planning in El Cervante would understand and follow the same overall structure.
Wow. I'd love to see that when you come up with it. Okay.
Any other comments? CI point 2, develop on plan application, area entry report, building modification request. And if there's any comments,
I've got a real bunch of them here. Just real quick, 400, I visited some of these sites that have things going on, like 400 Valley View Road. Okay, that's listed in somewhere back here. I mean, there's such a huge amount of things. 400 Valley View Road, I think it's on the El Cervante Planning and Zoning Agenda. Would this be a time to address that? Okay, 400 Valley View Road, the item that you just said, it's development plan applications, various reports, building modification requests, appeals, etc. Isn't that, I wrote all this down. I think that's one of them.
You're talking about one specific project. That
no, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yes, and 7 that I looked at.
Yeah, what's the page number? What are the page numbers?
Okay, I don't know. There's so many of them. I just wrote them down from what's in here. But they are on this agenda, okay?
Right, but we need to be able to read so we can follow along with what
you're okay, 400 Valley View Road. I'll have to find the page number. I don't know what...
If you copy the file number, the project title, and that's 05055, I'd rather you see it.
Yeah, I think they're often planning and zoning agendas or minutes. There was many pages of that. Okay, so, well, they were supposed to come to us too, I think, a lot of them, but I don't know whether they did or not, and they might not be on here.
Okay, so what's going
on? Yeah, there's a number of addresses that I visited that were on the Elsa Brainy P&Z committee.
Okay, and what's the, up at the top, what is that number?
This number.
Okay, I'm looking.
10.2.B.
Yeah, okay. No, it's 400 Valley View Road. So it's on one of these. That 400 Valley View Road is something that's going on there. But the main thing that's the problem there is there's no such address. Okay? So my problems were with a lot of these things had no such address. There was nothing there. So I'm wondering why it was on here. And I'm sorry I did not have one of the 400 Valley View Road is on one of these.
Remember what the proposal was there?
Yeah. Oh, it's next to Lifetime Dentistry. Okay, so there was a development that you folks would probably want to put a moratorium on to develop that again next to the Lifetime Dentistry, that must be 400 Valley View. Wait a minute, no, that's 44. No, 400 Valley View Road. We could not find it, but there is a 400 Valley View Road in here that had something going on with it. And I'm sorry.
Yes.
No, that's actually 4448 Appian Way.
Okay.
17 units at 1.63 acres. Okay. We were wondering about that because it's adjacent to the creek and it's within the redevelopment area.
Yeah, I can't find it.
Well, in the potential redevelopment area, in the zone plan change area. And then there's 4345 Appian Way, 7 lots, 0.34 acres. That is actually Roma Auto Shop. We talked to him, and he said he has no plans, and he has no 7 lots of 0.34 acres. So I'm concerned, and the person that was with me, that a lot of this information is incorrect. Okay? It is.
Okay, she's expressed a concern about the...
Yeah, 5705 Sobrani Avenue.
Well, tell me what...
I'll give you the addresses. They're all within your thing.
Tell me where you are.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know. What I'm asking you is write a letter because you've got so much stuff here and some of it's hard to read. I just went down and picked one and just to say I'm going to go look and see. Because when I saw 400 Valley View Road, I said, I don't know if there's any 400 Valley View.
Yeah, I'm going to type in here.
Well, there's no way to know what it is. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
if we know that the thing that's good is the actual number here.
Yeah. I'm looking for Valley View Road, and so far I can't find anything. Valley View Road.
It's looking
at making me wrong. Yeah. Concern and yeah.
Concern.
I'm going to have to start. Because you've got, I'll see one right here on page 10.2J. You've got MS-06-0009. Subdivide 40. Okay. That right there is a bad one, too.
10.2J.
10.2J is the May 11th EL Sobrani P&Z. Okay, that's item 7.4. That's 4951 San Tamil Dam Road. That should be Carmen Lane.
Right, but we didn't find that out until at the meeting because the county. This is the address the county had on the application.
Okay.
And it wasn't until they came to the meeting that the neighbor said, well, you know, that's really not there. No, that's far too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then especially this one that's 4345, I know that's Roma Auto Shop, and he said he's actually talked to you and told you that it's not, he doesn't have anything there, and it's evidently still.
Now, where do you see that address?
It's like one of your things, one of your agendas here. We've got several agendas on here tonight.
Right.
So.
What you can do is just write it down and call me, and then I could get a good idea. Cut it out and
But I'd be glad to do that because I want to clear it up for us.
Okay, now there's a letter in here about 120 Renfrew Road, the 10-home thing on Villa, near, right adjacent to Villas of Portofino. It's a letter that's in here that I think, okay, we went and looked at that, and we don't understand why you're objecting to a negative declaration on that.
The
it's a beautiful piece of property.
It is, and we don't have any major problems with the project except for the interest.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen is the property is off of Renfrew Court. There's the entrance to the village of Portofino, and exactly next to that, but a little bit higher up, is the second entrance road. So you're going to have people coming down Renfrew Court and making right turns in or left turns out of those projects and side by side. But then there's also more homes down further on Renfrew Court who will be trying to come through there. And
there's hardly any traffic on that road anyway. I mean,
but if you've got 10 houses and 10 houses, and the car trips are usually 8 to 10 car trips per day, there's going to be a pileup in there at some point in time. And because the two roads are side by side, it's...
So you want them to file an EIR? Is that what you're saying?
No. What we asked the county to do was come up, address the issue, see if they could come up with some way to deal with these two entrances that are side by side.
And another issue was the fact that
you've got something else there. There it is. Oh, we found it.
They didn't mention in the negative declaration a school that would be affected. And there is a play yard for young kids. There's an adjacent that when they're doing construction and that, there's going to be affected by their air quality and the construction. And we all we're asking is that they need to address this.
Why don't you ask Bethel if they're in? I mean, they have already said clearly they're in favor of all of both of these developments. They're the school there. Why don't you ask them instead of objecting for them?
Well, I'm not talking about that school.
What other school is there?
Well, if you read it before, it shows you it's a family daycare center at 715 Renfrew Road, and the adjacent your backyard playground for this is adjacent to the project.
Mm-hmm. So what would you have? See, this is why I'm trying to understand why you do this. Are you saying that if they don't do some kind of
mitigation
of, what kind of mitigation could they do that would please you folks?
Now, wait a minute. We're telling them that these are concerns that we have that they need to look at that they didn't address in the negative steps. That's all we're telling them. So I'm not going to go on and on about this. All I'm going to say is that it's the letter of items that were pointed out to them. It doesn't say we don't recommend this project.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, we found on page 10.2T, it says 9.22, new homes. 400 Valley View Road. There's no address to that.
I realize now. I just looked at that on here. There is a 400 Valley View Road. The only thing is there's no address on it because it's just their own property. This is the property right on the corner of Granny Avenue and Valley View, where that little teeny piece is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're putting the home.
And what did they want to put in one home there?
Yep.
Okay.
400 Valley View.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I would suggest that, you know, you come to the planning meeting and, you know, you can hear all about each one of these projects.
Yep. I know you suggested that many
times. It takes time to understand these projects.
Mm-hmm.
I
think this is a place I should be able to ask that, Barbara. You and I differ in that. I think this is an appropriate place to ask that question.
So
because they're on the agenda.
You asked the question, and now we're moving on. The next item is information item. Is there any questions on the information item? Okay, community group update.
Yeah, I have an update. I'm not this person, but I'm the Boys and Girls Club. I was asked by Tom Mason to advise you that he had a teen dance there in the early part of June, and there was over 500 teens with no incidents, and he's lobbying to get these teen trailers, you know, there, because there's a desperate need in this area for teenage facilities, and that's why I tried to get the MAC to sponsor a letter saying, and I, somehow I'd like to address it. I know it's been on here. I know the PNZ has a letter regarding the Boys and Girls Club in the agenda, and I'd like to be able to address it. I'm not sure where it is in this thing, but I'd like to be able to address what are your, basically, why are you stalling and what are your concerns?
You're stalling anybody, as far as I know.
What's happening, I called the planner of the county, and they're waiting for comments from the state fishing game because of the setbacks in the creek. And so that's the main thing. The county has already told us, yes, it's okay for them to be there. And they haven't even completed the process yet. But the county has said, yes, you know, we agree with you, it's important. Go ahead. The only concerns we had were fixing a few things like holes in the pavement and things, really tricky hazards for the kids. But we didn't have any objections to having the
portable
there.
Did you notify fishing game? Is that how they got involved?
No. The county automatically does that when there's a freezing rush.
How many teenagers were there?
He said there were 200 teenagers there.
Okay, I will say one thing that the Boys and Girls Club and the Friends of Garrity Creek is on July 22nd is putting on a joint concert and dance. And it will be one of the bands will be the Jill Hernandez band and the next band. So it's just something. No other comments.
Laura, do you want any information about our last meeting?
Well, and if it's not in here,
well, I mean, oh, it's in this information.
Yeah, it's all here.
Unless it's something additional.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it would just be, things from the packet about the jam and things like that. Well, all right, maybe people would be interested in the other, okay, I also put together another list. So I got real short. Subdivision 8835 is in Pomona, 2693 Athens Way. And the two-story, 3,670 square feet office building, two two-story townhomes. And they had a meeting Monday night, I think we had a similar. The planning commission was